In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Yesterday, President Biden unveiling a more than $2 trillion infrastructure and economic recovery package. The plan aims to revitalize a whole slew of things: transportation infrastructure, water systems, broadband, manufacturing, among many other goals. How will it be paid for, according to Biden? He says an increase in the corporate tax rate, also measures designed to prevent offshoring of profits. Well, this hour, not the political side of it. We're going to talk with a variety of engineers in the state whose work focuses on energy, roads, bridges, Iowa's infrastructure needs we'll be talking about, and measuring them with that backdrop of Biden's proposed plan. We want to know your question or concern about Iowa's infrastructure. Join our conversation. In the first half hour, we focus more on energy and climate aspects. In the second half hour, focusing on roads and bridges. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're joined now by Jerry Schnoor. He's been on our program before. We're delighted to have him again. He's a professor of environmental engineering, also co-director of the Center for Global and Regional Environmental Research at the University of Iowa. Jerry Schnoor, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Ben. It's good to be here.
Good to have you. Let's just get your overall reaction to this broad, major revitalization of our infrastructure proposed by the new administration.
Well, as you said, 20,000 miles of road, new roads, and 10,000 repairs on bridges, that would be a major undertaking, and it comes at a really good time because, you know, Ben, if you don't put oil in your car after 1 year, maybe, then nothing will happen. After even maybe 4 years, nothing will happen. But eventually, your car is going to completely break down. And that's sort of what we have going on in our country. We've allowed our infrastructure and deferred maintenance to go on for so long that this is really a timely proposal and should help with jobs, as President Biden says, too, because these are undertakings that are quite urgent and people will need to be hired. Regarding the environment, my own part, It contains a lot for that. We have to reduce our greenhouse gases in this decade, and that's a major undertaking, maybe a 50% or so decline. And so there's items in this proposal infrastructure plan that would help reduce our greenhouse gases as well and improve the environment.
Mm-hmm. And boost, I mean, we are a leader in renewable energy, both wind energy, biofuels as well. So boosts there for us in terms of biofuels and renewable energies and the workforce needed to maintain those.
That's right, but not so much directly as the infrastructure needed to make wind, for example, to continue to expand. Maybe more importantly for Iowa, the missing piece is solar. And, you know, in Iowa, this plan speaks to a lot of needs. We're near the bottom on charging stations for electric vehicles, just a couple hundred public charging stations in Iowa. And there's $174 billion in there for things like charging stations and research on electric vehicles. They aim for 50,000 new electric vehicle stations. We just have a couple hundred. In Iowa, we're among the oldest housing stock states. Our average is 40 to 49-year-old housing, and there's a lot in here regarding retrofits and weatherizing homes, which means jobs, jobs, jobs. and $213 billion on that. In Iowa, we need grid expansion quite bad because we've done so well on wind, almost 50% of our electricity now. And $100 billion in there is for grid expansion and a smart grid. Boy, that would really help us. In Iowa, we're 45th out of 50 states regarding the high-speed internet. Our internet coverage is abysmal, and there's $100 billion in there for high-speed internet. We're just beginning in Iowa to get some electricity storage for our wind and our coming solar. We have a 1.1 megawatt station at the Maharishi University near here in Fairfield, which is really quite amazing, and new battery storage for wind and solar in Decorah and Dubuque. So that's just beginning to come on. And that's so important because wind and solar, of course, are intermittent. And if you don't have a good enough grid to bring in power from other sections when the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining, then you better have something like battery storage. And we're just beginning that. So there's a lot in here for Iowa, I would say, Ben. And it will reduce greenhouse gas emissions, especially in the electric power sector and the commercial residential regarding our homes and retrofitting.
Of course, all these things sound wonderful to upgrade a variety of infrastructure needs. And I don't think anyone's really arguing that Iowa and many other states, the whole nation, needs an upgrade in so many facets of infrastructure. What do you say to those who are really worried about the huge investment needed? The president, I think, called this a once-in-a-generation opportunity, and that is a huge price tag that we have on this upgrade. What can you say to those worried about cost?
Well, it is a lot of money, that's for sure. And unlike the COVID recent relief bill, the $1.9 trillion, this $2.3 trillion is spread over 8 years. So it's really about a quarter trillion. That's still a lot of money each and every year. And there's a plan to try to pay for it. We can argue about that, but it has to do with increasing the corporate tax from 21% to 28%, and for taxing income and possibly wealth on the richest people more than $400,000 per year income.
Right, and I guess I've heard the argument we should think about this as an investment because we need to be globally competitive. Iowa needs to be competitive as a state, and you know, if your home, if your workplace, the infrastructure for Iowa or for the nation is not good, and I think the U.S. has slipped to 13th in terms of overall infrastructure, ranked against other countries, it damages our competitive, the competitive world, our competitiveness in the world for attracting business.
That's right. And again, like the car analogy, eventually you have to respond because it's just going to break down. 13th in the world for the richest nation in the world. Gee, that's not a very good rating, I don't think.
Join our conversation. Jerry Schnoor is with us, professor of environmental engineering, also co-director of the Center for Global and Regional Environmental Research at the University of Iowa. Tell us, what are your concerns? What are your questions concerning Iowa's infrastructure and the possible impact of this Biden proposal to work and over many years on the infrastructure, not only in Iowa, but across the nation? 1-866-780-9100. Email rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Joining Jerry and myself now, Jim McCauley is with us. He's the Anson Marston Distinguished Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering and the Jack London Chair in Power Systems Engineering at Iowa State University. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ben. It's good to be here.
Good to have you with us. You've been listening in on the conversation so far, so let me start off the same way I did with Jerry. You have your specific field of expertise in power systems. Your reaction to the infrastructure plan as an expert in energy and power systems?
Yeah, I'm thrilled at what I've read about it, and Jerry's comments were great. I understand that. Most of all, it's about as far as the electric system is concerned, it's about renewables and transmission. I was just absolutely pleased to see the emphasis placed on 20 gigawatts of transmission and incentives for building transmission, and particularly kind of an effort to place incentives on utility companies to bring in increased amounts of wind and solar. And of course, in Iowa, we're very well positioned for satisfying those kind of limits. And I can imagine utility companies in other states may be looking towards the least cost way to satisfy those kind of requirements. And Iowa and other Midwestern states have to be in the crosshairs of people that are thinking in that fashion.
Okay, so Jim, help us. You threw out 20 gigawatts there. I have no way, and I think a lot of our listeners have no way to judge what that means. Give us a picture of Iowa's energy production, especially with our increasing wind power there. And our challenge here is really when we see all those wind turbines cranking out energy, we don't consume it here. It needs to get out of the state, right? And it makes us more valuable when we can export it. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. At this point in time, Iowa has about 10 gigawatts owing to the, you know, good investment practices of MidAmerican Energy and Alliant Energy and other cooperatives and municipals in the state. We've built up this wind fleet so that it is very healthy, number two in the nation or three, depending on sort of which month you ask, in terms of capacity. So we have a very large amount of wind, as Jerry mentioned. Solar, we're just now beginning to sort of see that happen, but that's going to increase as well. At this point, we're sort of transmission locked. The utility companies have done an excellent job at using the transmission that they have to facilitate the wind growth that we have seen since about 2004. at this point, the transmission system is really the bottleneck to building more. We're at the point in Iowa where, you know, we're sort of having sufficient capability for local needs, but if there is a serious interest in exporting wind power over the next 5, 10, 15 years, then certainly transmission grid is going to need to be expanded. Keyword there is expanded. We need more transmission capacity. So I mentioned the 20 gigawatts of transmission capacity. So, and you can get a little bit of a sense of what that feels like when you imagine that in Iowa we have about 10 gigawatts of wind capacity. So that's the it's hard to kind of compare transmission capacity to generation capacity, but that gives you at least a first order feel for what that number 20 gigawatts means. It's not huge, but it is significant for sure, and will go a long way towards unlocking the renewable availability that is in various places around the country.
Mm-hmm. Join our conversation, our two engineers, looking at Iowa's infrastructure and the Biden proposal to have a massive investment in our infrastructure over the next few years. Jerry Schnur is with us. Jim McCauley, you just heard. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, with your questions and concerns. Let's go to our phones. Dan is joining us from Newton. Dan, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, I just don't think they're spending money in the right place with this infrastructure plan. It just doesn't make enough power. I mean, like, the problem we have with climate change is we're burning carbon to produce energy. Electricity is actually a very small part of that. So if we're talking about replacing the energy that we're using, not just the electricity, we would need to massively expand how much is being produced with the carbon. That just is not in this bill, mm-hmm, at all.
Okay, Dan,
You got engineers here. We're not replacing industrial heat. We're replacing space heating, and we're not replacing transportation with any of this. And they're not going to do it with wind turbines either. So, Dan, let's hear their response to that.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for the concern, Dan, joining us from Newton. Let's have both of you take a crack at this. Serious concerns from Dan. Jim McCauley, you first. What do you think of Dan's comment that this isn't really enough to address the problem?
There's a great point in that that the electric power system is not the only carbon emitting part of the economy. It's certainly a significant one, though. But you also have the transportation sector, and as he mentioned, the heating sector, particularly with respect to the industrial uses. But it is the case that, maybe something on the order of between a third and half of our carbon emissions are coming from the electric side. So replacing our, particularly the coal-fired plants, that's the most serious emitter. Replacing coal-fired plants with wind and solar goes a long ways, you know. But I would make one more very interesting comment in response to Dan's interest, and that is, it's environmentally effective to green the grid. But more importantly, in some sense, it's economically effective. And what I mean by that is today, 20 years ago, that I could not say that. But today, it is more cost-effective, it's more economically attractive to build a new utility-scale wind or solar plant than it is to run an existing coal plant. That is amazing that we have come that far with respect to building technological efficiencies into these renewable resources. So it's about environmentally conscious behavior. It's also about wise, prudent, economically conscious behavior.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, did you have anything to add? We have other calls to go to, but I assume as a environmental engineer, you want to add to comment on Dan's concerns as well.
I think Dan makes a great comment, and that is that electricity, wind and solar, for example, low carbon electricity is not a part of the bill because, as you know, that both our grid and our power plants are generally privately owned, except for the Tennessee Valley Authority. But it does include a lot of money for clean energy research and $27 billion for actual installations as well. I think that was mentioned, we're with wind and solar being cheaper than coal. Coal industry and the coal-fired power plants, their days are numbered. So it's just a matter of time until the economy replaces them with cleaner facilities.
About 5 minutes before we take a break and say goodbye to Jerry and Jim. Francis is with us in Dubuque. Let's slip in a couple of other calls, including Francis. Hi, Francis. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Ben. I'd just like to remind you and your guests and the listeners that we've had money for wars. We've had money to bail out the bankers. We've had money to bail out Wall Street. I mean, we've had money to bail out corporations. So as a pure economic policy, I think this is great. In addition to that, when we talk about repayment, this will provide quality, good-paying building trades jobs to build this infrastructure. So it's a double win. When you pay working people money in wages, they, one, pay taxes, which will reimburse the federal government to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, those wages paid to working people roll through the economy. Those working people are going to take that money and spend it right here in the economy, buying houses, cars, refrigerators, paying rent, paying mortgages. And so it's a double win because we get not only upgraded infrastructure, which will last us for years and years, but we also build back the economy by paying workers and building skills in at personal level, and we get money back in taxes and money that rolls through this economy. So to me, this is great. This is what we should have been doing years ago, but we've fallen by the wayside, and it's going to bring us back up to date.
Okay. Francis, thank you very much for your call from Dubuque. There's a caller who couldn't stay on, Carol, from Ryan. This is Ryan. Can you explain about the transmission lines? That's a little bit more understandable to the listener. Jim, help us out there with perhaps what you were explaining there before. As an expert in power systems, how Iowa's infrastructure there needs to be upgraded to be more effective.
Yeah, that's a great clarification. I appreciate it. And the essence of the issue is pretty simple. You have resource that is wind generated or electricity in a location where, excuse me for the population of Iowa, but not many people live. In other words, the electric load centers, when you compare the Midwest to more eastern load centers or even more western load centers along the coast, the population density of the Midwest is not very great, so the load is not very high. So what this, but the resource is here. So how do you move it? The only way you can move it, unlike electricity generated by natural gas, where you can also move natural gas by pipeline, right? Electricity generated by wind and solar can only be moved by transmission. So, you know, up in northwest Iowa and southwest west Minnesota, the wind resource is just fantastic. You get extremely high average annual wind speeds there, and it becomes very, very cost effective to build wind plants in that region. But of course, that means you need to move that energy. Right. And so building that transmission is kind of the key to that whole concept.
I've heard the Midwest, the area you speak of, called perhaps the Saudi Arabia of wind energy. So instead of instead of putting the oil in tankers, shipping it around the world, we've got to find transmission lines and build that infrastructure, is what I hear you saying, Jim.
That's right. You know, and I just quick comment here to add to that thought. You know, a lot of people are looking towards rooftop solar as being kind of a competing answer. I would very much push back against that. I'm not against rooftop solar at all. Let's have as much of it as we can. But indeed, it's a form of diversification, which is a really great thing to do in terms of building out an electric system. But it's not nearly as cost effective to build solar panels on your roof in comparison to building utility-scale solar plants and utility-scale wind plants. So there's a huge economic difference there.
Jim McCauley of ISU and Jerry Schnoor of the University of Iowa, we will have to have you gentlemen back on because this will be in the news for weeks, months, years to come. Thank you for the opening thoughts. Jerry Schnoor of the University of Iowa and Jim McCauley of ISU are two engineers. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about roads and transportation as it pertains to this infrastructure package. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River.
The Iowa legislature is in session.
Let's just go around. We got a lot of people.
There are proposals for constitutional amendments, education, taxes, the budget, and many policy bills.
So what needs to be fixed?
Our weekly podcast, Under the Golden Dome, is following the session.
I want to thank you for your consideration of this important legislation.
I'm John Pemble. Subscribe to the podcast or hear Under the Golden Dome on our website, iowapublicradio.org.
So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking about Iowa's infrastructure. Well, actually, the nation's infrastructure. Iowa, of course, our home, so we're interested most in that, I think, in this context, the context of President Biden's proposal for a more than $2 trillion infrastructure and economic boost to the country, and plans to revitalize transportation infrastructure, water systems, broadband, manufacturing. In the last half hour, if you were with us, we discussed mostly the energy infrastructure, also climate change considerations there. This hour, roads and bridges, our focus. So what's your question or concern about Iowa's roads and bridges now and into the future. This new proposal, there are a lot of details to be worked out, but according to the reports, over $600 billion to be put into transportation, infrastructure, bridges, roads, public transit, ports, airports, electrical vehicle development. Let's talk about roads and bridges. Jim Nelson is with us, Director of the Bridges and Structures Bureau at the Iowa Department of Transportation. Jim Nelson, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
Good afternoon. Give us an overview of the condition of Iowa's bridges and roads right now.
Sure. We inspect our bridges on a less than 24-month cycle, and then we collect data on the bridges, and that resolves into a rating of our bridges, good, fair, and poor. And Iowa annually tends to make the national news because of our large number of poor bridges. You know, we rank 7th in the nation in terms of total number of bridges. Mm-hmm. But for poor bridges, we actually have the first, you know, number one quantity of poor bridges. We kind of need to break that number down, though, a little bit and look at it in more detail. For bridge deck area, we actually rank 7th among the state in terms of number of poor bridges. And then it by the systems that we have, the primary system and the secondary roads, there's quite a difference in our poor bridges. And so primary system, that consists of our interstate, U.S. highways, state highways. We have just under 4,200 bridges in the primary system. And we actually only have 35 poor bridges on the primary system. So that's less than 1% of our inventory.
When you say poor, Jim, define that a little bit more, because I've heard deficient as another term there. Unsafe would be a different term. So what do we mean by poor? Is that unsafe in any way or just in need of repair or replacement?
No, great question, Ben. Yeah, a poor bridge is not an unsafe bridge. An unsafe bridge is a closed bridge. A poor bridge, and the poor bridge term is actually synonymous with structurally deficient, which you had heard used in the past. And the Federal Highway Administration changed their terminology recently. And I think one of the reasons they did that was structurally deficient really gave people the wrong connotation in terms of what was wrong with that bridge. And so what a poor bridge really means is that the bridge is showing signs of its age through deterioration or defects or damage. And in an ideal circumstances with, you know, unconstrained funding, we would make a repair or a replacement of that bridge because of that item that's in poor condition. But no way does that mean that bridge is unsafe. And in fact, it doesn't even mean that it necessarily has reduced load capacity beyond the ability to carry legal loads. So a bridge that has deteriorated such that you can't carry legal loads anymore, that's a posted bridge. And not all poor bridges are posted. In fact, many of the bridges that are poor aren't posted.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Just, we have a couple minutes left here. I wanted to get to it. And the couple of questions. When we talk about Iowa's thousands of bridges that are ranked poor here, and also when we think about Iowa wanting to say competitive in terms of, it's hard to see businesses saying, oh, look at Iowa's infrastructure compared to another state's. That's not a selling point. When you look at priorities and, of course, limited resources to repair bridges, how do you judge which ones get attention, get money, get maintenance?
Right. And you can see by the condition of our bridges on the different systems, primary and secondary roads, where we are dedicating the money. You know, primary system where most of our traffic is, commercial traffic and just motorist traffic, only having 35 poor bridges there, that is where the money has gone. You look at the secondary roads, the county, city roads, where we have about 20,000 bridges, and we have over 4,500 of those considered poor. That's a challenging situation. You know, we're greater than 20% poor there.
Yeah.
And then you look at those bridges that are poor, and many of them have extremely low traffic volumes. You know, about 50% of them carry fewer than 35 vehicles per day. And, you know, almost 80% of them carry fewer than 100 vehicles per day. Mm-hmm. And so it's tough to make an investment in that infrastructure that has that incredibly low traffic volume.
In closing, in the final minute here, Jim Nelson of the Iowa DOT, when we don't know much, and of course a lot of details to be worked out, it hasn't even been passed yet. Biden's plan here would put over $600 billion into transportation infrastructure. How much can Iowa use that? We had a gas tax passed in just a few years ago to go towards our infrastructure. How much need is there that could potentially be satisfied by more investment?
Yeah, I think the Biden plan actually gives us a fantastic opportunity to address some of what, you know, Jerry mentioned before in terms of deferred maintenance. You mentioned the $600 million for transportation. If you break the plan down further, it actually it provides $115 billion for modernizing bridges and highways that are in most critical need of repair. And no doubt we have those in Iowa. And so those funds will be very useful to help get us out of the situation we are in with poor bridges.
Okay.
I think
Jim,
it's also important to note.
Yeah, go ahead.
The Biden plan is over and above transportation bill reauthorization, and which is another thing that Congress should be working on very shortly.
Jim Nelson, Director of the Bridges and Structures Bureau at the Iowa Department of Transportation. Thank you, Jim.
Yep, thanks.
Let's finish up the hour talking about how the condition of roads and bridges impacts driving safety. Dan McGehee is with us, Associate Professor of Industrial and Systems Engineering at the University of Iowa, as well as Director of the National Advanced Driving Simulator at the UI. Dan, welcome back to the program.
Great to be with you again, Ben.
Shauna Hallmark is with us. She's Director of the Institute for Transportation at Iowa State University. Welcome to you, Shauna.
Well, thank you. Great to be with you, Ben.
Shauna, let me start with you. How would you judge the present condition in terms of safety? We just heard from a representative of the DOT about all these poor bridges and roads here. Give us an idea of how that impacts safety.
Well, in general, if roads aren't safe to drive on, if you've got, it's typically things like poor pavement or not doing things like maintaining your edges that lead to safety. But I mean, I think Iowa's done a pretty good job of addressing safety in this state, because a lot of the things that you do are getting people to slow down, addressing driver behavior, or once people go off the road, keeping them on the roadway. So that'd be things like the cable median barrier that you see down the middle of the interstate in many places. So typically the problem with infrastructure can just be if you have pavement that's worn, that can cause problems. Or if you're not able to invest money in safety because you're investing in other things, then you have less money to do that. But I think overall, Iowa does a really good job with safety.
Right. And a concrete example, when I was talking to getting my car repaired a few years ago, I think it was after an especially tough winter where we had a lot of potholes. Those hadn't been filled very quickly, at least in the area that I was driving, and the person in the garage said, "Oh, we get a lot of repairs when the roads are not well, when they have holes. Of course, it damages your cars, right, Shauna? That can have a direct impact on the pocketbook of people who are just driving their cars."
Oh, sure. Yeah, if you've driven over bumpy roads, that does lead to you needing to have maintenance more often.
Mm-hmm. Dan McGehee, give us your reaction to this potentially huge investment in Iowa's infrastructure for roads. And you, as the director of the National Advanced Driving Simulator at the University of Iowa, have your eye on not only the present condition of the roads, but what they need to be like in the future to accommodate our new modes of transportation.
Yeah, I think this is part of the discussion that we don't see too much about in this bill, but there is a great amount dedicated to the next generation of infrastructure, which is digital. So much like our lives are completely consumed by data, the next generation of infrastructure and vehicles specifically will also be connected to massive amounts of data. So if you take a look at the Eisenhower Freeway system, that was implemented in the 1950s, that was really for commerce and especially originated around defense, getting military moved around the country quickly. Today, we don't need as much of that, but now broadband and communication infrastructure related to transportation, whether it's commerce or other, is really the next major step forward.
Mm-hmm. And for you, when we talk about moving around in our state or in our country on four wheels, what's the future there, and how dependent is that on a significant investment in our roads?
Well, as I said, the way we look at it, we concentrate on the next generation of vehicles and driver performance in those vehicles, data, communication between vehicles, communication between the vehicle and the infrastructure is really going to enhance safety greatly. As Shauna mentioned, we do a really good job here in Iowa. The Iowa DOT is really one of the most progressive DOTs in the country in terms of its forward-looking outlook and planning, as well as real-time safety. So the vehicle-to-vehicle communication and vehicle-to-infrastructure and infrastructure-to-vehicle communication is really the next generation.
Mm-hmm. Shauna, to you at the Institute for Transportation at ISU, how much do you concern yourself with Iowa's infrastructure as it pertains to making Iowa an attractive business location?
Oh, that's a great question. Thank you. Because we know that if you don't have good roads and ways to get people from point A to point B, it's not an attractive place to live. So in Iowa, you know, you have a lot of roads to maintain and things like that. So trying to have the appropriate amount to, you know, maintain your neighborhood and make sure the snow plows out. But could I also do a shout out for research in this plan and how that maintains infrastructure?
Sure.
So at Intrans, we do a lot of research for the Iowa DOT and other agencies. And the new bill and all bills are great, because one thing we need to do is make sure we have new ways of doing things faster, smarter, more efficiently. So we have one group, for instance, that did some accelerated bridge construction, which means they construct the bridge next to the roadway and they can keep the roadway open while they're constructing. And then they put the bridge in place and, you know, it takes much less time. You can keep trucks and farm traffic moving. We have another group that is working on figuring out how to make soy oil into a binder for asphalt, so you can replace the carcinogenic and expensive asphalt product that's currently being used, and now you can use like an Iowa-based product paving roads. So moving forward, I think we really need to find ways to do things better and faster and smarter. It's not just a matter of investing more and doing the same thing. We need to have research that plays a role in doing things that make this much more efficient.
Mm-hmm. Join our conversation 1-866-780-9100 as we discuss Iowa's road and bridge infrastructure, the future of it, and its needs. 1-866-780-9100. Sam is joining us, listening in, I think, southwest Iowa. Sam, welcome to the program.
Hi there. It's actually southeast Iowa, but thanks for taking my call.
Okay, thank you very much. I didn't read that correctly. It was correct on the screen, but my eyes messed up there. Sam, what's on your mind?
Well, I drive propane delivery truck for a lot of rural communities and farms around here. And one of the issues that I ran into this past winter was there's a lot of gravel roads that turn unexpectedly into dirt or low maintenance roads. And they're usually posted, but it's not always posted very conveniently. And sometimes I find myself having to stop and back up and go around for a mile or two to find another way to get to a customer, because Google Map has no idea when a road is going to turn to dirt or not. So I'm just wondering if the state has any plans to turn more of those into gravel roads, or perhaps at the very least to communicate to mapping places like Google when a road is dirt, so that we don't get navigated down those and then have to turn around and backtrack a bunch?
Hmm. Interesting question, Sam. As you deliver propane, I can understand that that can be a constant frustration. Shauna, can you help Sam out with some words?
That is a great question, Sam, and I actually don't know the answer to that, but I think it's important that we do figure out where those roads are, because as Dan was mentioning with connected vehicles, one thing connected vehicles need is they also need to know that before they turn down a road. So I don't actually know what the answer is, but it's a great question. It does need to be resolved.
Dan, would you like to add to that comment by Shauna?
Yeah, it's really about maintaining those digital maps. And so right now the private sector is doing a lot of that kind of work. And so they are slated to drive a particular route every 2 or 3 years to make sure that those are up to date. But sometimes it's a lot longer.
Dan, I wonder, what is your reaction to the Biden proposal here? What excites you most about this level of investment in our infrastructure from your perspective?
It's definitely needed. I mean, as you've covered throughout this whole program today, there are so many different aspects to our infrastructure that need to be updated. And I think what's particularly exciting about this is that it takes it into a new dimension, something that literally has not been addressed since the Eisenhower freeway system. And if you think about it, you know, we bought our houses in the 50s and the 60s for $10,000 or $12,000 when that first was being implemented. Today, our houses are worth sometimes 50 times that amount of money. And so this is so needed to enhance our civil society so that we can transport our goods faster and more efficiently and cheaper and live better.
Mm-hmm. Shauna, let me ask you the same question. When you look at, we don't know many details about the Biden proposal. What do you see in it that excites you?
I think what's really exciting is that they're addressing underserved communities, including people with disabilities. And I'm also just really excited that they're thinking of things like rail. The connected autonomous vehicles are great because it'll increase capacity, but there's a point where we really do need to consider rail and high-speed rail in this country.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 1-866-780-9100. Dennis is in Ottumwa. Dennis, welcome to the program.
Thank you. My question was to address weight issues in semis that are on the highways and bridges, in, not only this state, but all over the country. And I seldom see a weigh station anymore where scales will check the weight or overweight of trucks. And I'm glad to hear her talk about the utilization of rail shipment is much more prevalent in Europe and other countries, and not to discount the need for truck deliveries, but overweight trucks is a very serious problem when it comes to bridge maintenance and highway maintenance. And it's also a source of revenue. But I used to drive a truck, and I was disappointed every time I saw the sign that said the scales were open, and I had to pull over and have them check my logs and so on. So that's something I'm glad to take any comments off the air.
You were disappointed as a truck driver to see those signs, but you see it as necessary, right, to prevent the over...
Yes, absolutely. Time is the of the essence when you're driving a truck and trying to make deliveries and keep costs down. Sometimes you have to wait in line. 20 trucks would be in line there, and it took time to go through it. But you'd see guys pulled over, as I did, a couple of times, that it was mainly an issue of my log not being kept up to snuff. And,
okay.
Those are issues as well as the fines, can constitute quite a bit of money to help maintain highways and bridges.
Yep. Dennis, excellent comment. Former truck driver Dennis from Ottumwa. Shauna, what about the loads on our give us a sense of how increased weight impacts our infrastructure there?
Well, obviously it's the weight per axle that's the problem. So the more weight you have, obviously the more weight on the tire. But I think interesting to his question is that's kind of where technology can help us out, because we do have weigh in motion stations that can weigh while you're actually on the freeway. And so you're being frequently sometimes weighed, but you just don't know about it as much because it's now actually done by technology. So you could actually and do weigh trucks, and then that information can be communicated. You can pick up a truck's license plate and know everything about that truck. And that's where it's getting into Dan with the digital infrastructure, that a lot of these things can be done without the driver even being aware and just being able to go on their way. And then, maybe later there's a ticket or something, but we don't always have to stop people to do the things that we need to do.
Mm-hmm. Dan, the final minute to you. Should this infrastructure package be passed, give us a vision into the future. How are transportation in this area, our digital infrastructure will change and enhance our mobility in the area. How soon?
Well, one thing. Well, I think once they turn on the spigot, we will see some of those funds flow fairly quickly. And I think, as Shauna mentioned, the research side of things, which the universities are most interested in, will see some benefit. But the Iowa DOT will also see that quickly. And one of the things that I like to point out frequently, Shauna and I work together a lot and for a long time. The University of Iowa and Iowa State University have a very unique relationship relative to other state schools that generally compete with one another. And our universities will be collaborating, Iowa State on the infrastructure side and the University of Iowa on the vehicle side of things.
Okay, Dan McGeehee, thank you for joining us from the University of Iowa, Shauna Hallmark of Iowa State University. Shauna and Dan, we appreciate your comments and your expertise, and thanks for the callers this half hour. We appreciate that. Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk about immigration policy in historical perspective. Also, the Gazette's James Lynch with a State House update, and our own Natalie Krebs on Iowa's vaccination campaign. It's a NewsBuzz edition tomorrow on the program. River to River, produced by Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer, Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.
Iowa is known far and wide for corn and soybeans, but those of us who live here know that Iowa is so much more. I'm Charity Nebbe. From agriculture to high culture, each day on Talk of Iowa, I talk to farmers, artists, authors, musicians, scientists, athletes, and others who make Iowa what it is. Talk of Iowa, weekday mornings at 10 on Iowa Public Radio.